Learning should be, in Ritz Hashem, only for good things, only for brachas, for everybody. Okay, so we are continuing with this wonderful parsha that I'm working out. We're on page 422. That's where we were, and we are 422, 424. Okay, so last time we were quite technical, and we went through all the different damages that a person can do to somebody else, as we saw, and there was a different compensation, so to speak, that you have to pay if you hurt somebody. And we mentioned it goes into a general five categories, as we said, that you have to compensate and we mentioned that for the person's actual damage, you know, whatever was done to them, and then obviously for the doctor's bills and for the shame and for the lack of work. So all of the different things that the person incurs because of what you have done to them. Those are like direct damages. Now, as we mentioned, we finished off last week and we said one of the psukim that we read last week when we talked about these damages, and it was pasuk, let me just see here, it could be even on page 420. So we read that if you hurt somebody and they are they literally have to go to bed, so to speak, so if you hit them with a stone or with a fist, and we said you have to pay for their time off of work. And the last words in Pasuk Yutes, Pasuk 19, was Virapa Yirape, and you have to pay for their medical bills, remember, as we mentioned. So we have to compensate them medically. What we said, and we're going to leave the technical for a little bit, so now we'll go something nice, and then we're going to come back to the technical, because that's what this parsha is. But we said that this pasuk is a very famous pasuk because not only does it tell you that you have to compensate if you damage somebody, obviously, for their medical bills, but this pasuk in and of itself, every word in Torah is exact. And the fact that it says, virapa yirape, it means that there is permission for a doctor to heal. Here we have permission given to a doctor to heal. So we take it for granted. Of course a doctor can heal. That's what a doctor is for. That's from the doctor's perspective, and from our perspective, of course, we're permitted to go to doctors. That's what we all do. The truth is, it's not so simple. So I just want to share with you, first of all, and then we're going to see a beautiful Ramban. So the commentaries actually discuss this, and they just want to find this one inside. So the commentaries discuss it, and they say like this, that the truth is that this is a special authorization given to doctors to heal and for people to go to doctors. Okay, virapai yirape.
Yeah,
it can be, but it doesn't say that. It says virapai yirape. Yirape is, you're right, but no, it says that you can, the medical bills, that's what it means. Yirape does mean, but virapai means you shall heal. So it's like a command that you're intervening in some way. You're right, Leigh, but it's an intervening, that you're intervening in some way to bring about the healing. Yes. So you're right. Some people might interpret it and say, no, it doesn't mean going to a doctor. Maybe the healing is, as we say, going to a prophet or going to shul and davening. Who says that the healing is by going to a doctor? So we'll see in a minute. But generally speaking, the Mefarshim say, if you just look at it according to Pshat, according to the simple meaning of the psukim, this, and the Gemara says, this is actually where we see that a doctor is given authorization to heal the sick, and it doesn't contradict our trust in Hashem. And that's from here. Because otherwise, we should just leave it to Hashem, and we shouldn't have to compensate for medical bills. Because why did he go to a doctor? Who told him to go to a doctor? He should have just davened, and Hashem would have healed him. So obviously, here we see permission for a person to go to a doctor, and in our context, we have to repay him because we've caused him that damage. But that just generally means a person has permission. The Evan Ezra, and it's interesting because even there's a whole discussion as far as how far, so to speak, when you go to the doctor. What are you allowed the doctor to do, and what type of injuries can you go to a doctor for? So very interesting, so it says like this. Some people say, according to the Tosfos, all illnesses, even those which are heaven-sent, which we would say all illnesses are heaven-sent, but nevertheless, perhaps we might mean illnesses which are not caused by another human being, or not by negligence, rather just came out of nowhere. So according to Tosfos, every illness that a person gets, they have permission to go to a doctor. But interestingly, it says like this, that the Evan Ezra, the Rabachia, they say that it's limited. This permission, so to speak, to go to a doctor is actually limited. It's not a blanket, you know, kind of a thing. They say interesting thing. They say it's limited to the treatment of external illnesses, external diseases. Okay, it's not, obviously that's not how we live our life, so that's not the way we paskin, but it's interesting that such a thing is even discussed. Interesting, it says like this, the Rambam has a view, and we know the Rambam himself was a doctor, so he has a view that it's actually a religious obligation to go to a doctor. That's what he says. A person has to take care of their health, and therefore part of that is doing the right thing and going to a doctor if something is wrong. But the Ramban, and let's see what the Ramban says, he was also in science and medicine, and let's see his view about it. Okay, so the sheets that I've just given out, and I'll show you something. This is a very fascinating idea. And again, we take it with understanding that we are permitted to go to doctors, and not only are we permitted, but the way Torah says nowadays, we are encouraged to obviously do everything within the natural means to take care of our health. But we're just going to analyze the background of how it works, because it is, in a sense, a contradiction, as we said, if we are meant to put ourselves totally in the hands of Hashem and to trust in Hashem, who says we have a right to interfere? So it's an interesting discussion, and it's something that we should at least be aware that it even exists, so to speak. So this Ramban that is in front of you is not from our Parsha. It is from Parsha's Bechukaisai, which is at the end of Chumash Vayikra, and that, over there, we have a whole discussion of the blessings and the curses, right? It's one of the places in Torah where we read about all the beautiful brachos that Hashem promises us if we follow in His ways, and all the things that will go wrong if we don't follow in His ways. Now, the Ramban has a very fascinating philosophical perspective on all of those brachos, because if you look into those brachos, a lot of them seem to be straightforward things that don't seem to be so earth-shattering, like rain will fall in the right time, people won't get very sick. I mean, unfortunately, people do get sick, but many people, Baruch Hashem, do live generally healthy lives. They're not outright massive lightning and thunder miracles. The crops will grow. Most of the times, crops grow, right? So they're not like miracles in that sense. So he discusses, what is this blessing here? What is this specific blessing? And why is this specifically connected to if you follow in Hashem's ways, especially putting it into context that we see that many people do not follow in Hashem's ways and they don't get sick, and many people do follow in Hashem's ways and they do get sick, and on the flip side, many people don't follow in Hashem's ways and no matter how much they'll plant, nothing will grow. You know, so Rambam wants to understand, what does this mean? What is it really talking about? So I've bracketed it. I made the whole Rambam, but if you see on the first column, on the bottom of the first column, there's a bracket and it says the word aval. Do you see that? Really? Yeah, beautiful. So let's see from here. He says, aval elu habrochos shebeparsha hazois hein klaliyos ba'am. These brachas that are mentioned in this parsha are brachas which we're talking about to the entire nation. We're not talking to an individual obviously everybody will reap the benefit, but we're talking more general. This will happen to us as a people. V'hein b'yois kol amenu kulam tzadikim. When our nation will be all righteous. V'lekach Yaskir Tamid Bekan, that's why over here it mentions constantly Haaretz, Vinasna Haaretz, Lavetach Ba'artzachem, Shalom Ba'aretz, Min Haaretz. If you look into those verses, you'll see that it seems to stress, and it says it so many times, when will these blessings take place? When we will live in the land of Israel and we will be following in Hashem's ways. Obviously, the ideal time when there will be a Beis HaMikdash and there will be a godliness revealed, we will be deserving, and we will be generally, as a nation, fantastically good, and then we will receive, as a nation, all of these blessings. And as he says, V'loy savar ba'artzachem, and they will not pass through your land. Ukfar be'arnu ki kol eila habrachis kulam nisim. Truth is, they're all miraculous. All of these blessings are miraculous. Ein b'teva, it is not natural. Shayavayu hagshamim, that the rains should come. V'yeh shalim lanu, and there should be peace for us. Min, and we're going now to the top. Ha'ayivim, from the enemies. V'yavay mayrach b'libam, and that our fear should be in the hearts of the enemies. Lanus, as we say, lanus meya mipnei chamisha, that's one of the things it says, right? That 100 enemies will flee from before 5 of ours. Ba'asay seinu, hachukim v'hamitzvis. It's not natural that as a direct result of us doing a mitzvah, that will happen. That's not natural. That's a miracle. That's why we know it doesn't happen unless we're in the time of miracles. So in other words, there's no guarantee that if you do a mitzvah, immediately all the good things are going to happen. That's a miracle. That's a bracha that Hashem has promised us, so to speak, right? This is an extra benefit, if you want to say. And the other way, God forbid, that if we don't follow in Hashem's ways and we do plant in the seventh year, that we won't reap. It's not natural for that to happen. That's not the natural way. Even though they are hidden miracles, because the world is still going according to the way it's meant to conduct itself, imahem, with them, with these, so to speak, beautiful blessings, which we are saying are miracles. Aval heim misparsimim mitzad heyaisam tamid la'olam b'chol ha'aretz. But what is unusual here, and why do they become famous and known, and why do they become something that we stop, is because they are consistent, and they are constant, and they are happening to everybody. That's where it becomes miraculous. So if some good things happen to you sometimes, well, some good things happen to everybody sometimes, and some bad things happen to everybody sometimes, and that's the natural order of the world. But if Hashem makes it, that if everybody's keeping Torah and mitzvahs, and as a direct result of that, everybody will have only brachas, that's a miracle. That's already taking on a whole different level, and then we start to notice something is interesting. There's something amazing happening here. And as he says, ki im ha-tzadik ha-echad yichyeh, because if one tzadik lives, v'yaser Hashem b'achala b'kirbay, and Hashem removes any sickness from him, v'yimale yomav, and he fills out his years, yikre gam ze b'ktas rishoyim. We know some wicked people have that also, right? They have good, beautiful, good morning, wonderful lives, as we know, even if they don't deserve it. That happens to an good morning. To an individual, it happens, as we know, whether he be tzaddik, whether he be rasha. Is there, there's another one. Yes, thank you so much, Leah. Okay, so he says like this, Aval kishetia eretz achas kula, but if there's one full complete land, the am echad tamid, and one nation constantly, beredes hageshem beitai, where the rain falls in the right time, visayveya, and they're satisfied. In other words, everything grows enough. Vishalva, vishalim, and peace, and you know, everything is like secure, ubrius, and health, ugvura, and strength, vishivran ha'ivim, and the enemies fall. Be'inyan she'ein kamayu b'chal ha'ilam, that you don't find anywhere in the world, as he says. Sorry. Yivada lakol, ki me'eis Hashem ha'isazais. That will become known, that's already, everybody will stop and say, that's miraculous, that's madness. So this is we'll get to what we're leading on to now. Sorry, it's a bit long, but it's just a very beautiful idea, and to understand it fully, it's worth to do the whole thing inside. Okay, so then he goes on and he says like this. So as we can see already, it's not natural for everybody to be well, even if you're righteous. That's not natural. But Hashem promised and gave a beautiful bracha that if we are all righteous, that that's what he will do. So it's a special bracha and it will be a special miracle. Well, in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, it seems that that's what happened. It was incredible times. People were well. People had enough to eat. The rain fell at the right time. There was peace in the land. It was a preview of the time of Mashiach, which is when this will really happen fully, as we know. And this is what we're all waiting for. It seems that way. It seems that was really the only time that this ever really happened. I know. But you know what? It doesn't seem that there was ever a time that everybody was really, yeah. He, Shlomo HaMelech, had such an incredible ability to reign and to inspire and to unite everybody, that this is what happened. And that's why we have the beautiful pasuk, Ishtachas Gafnei, Ishtachas Teinosei, and it was just really in the time of Mashiach. That was in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. But not any other time. But and the truth is, it's natural for it not to be any other time, in a sense, because we're never all good, so to speak. And even if we are good, it's not natural if an individual is not natural that things should just go beautifully for him. That's just not the way it works, as we know. So then the Ramban continues, and he says like this. Let's see. Okay, that's what he says. Okay, so everybody will know that Hashem does it. That's why the pasuk says, at that time, all the nations will see that the name of God is called upon you, and they will all be afraid of you. Because then they'll see, wow, this is something unbelievable. There's a special supervision happening. The heipech zeyeh beklolus, and the opposite is with the curses. But ein shei haaretz, with the punishments of the land. Because it says, v'nasati es shameichem kebarzel, right, that the heavens will become like iron. In other words, it won't rain, it won't give forth what it needs to. V'ein shei hachayli, and all the punishments of illnesses, k'maysha amar, v'chaloim ra'im v'ne'emanim, right, terrible, terrible illnesses. Sheyiklol hamaychel v'yachli, that even the food will be cursed, and it will cause us to become sick. So if that happens to everybody, that's also a miracle. I mean, it's not a very nice miracle, but it's also miraculous if everybody is bad and that's the result. So if there's a country where everybody is bad, and what happens to that country? Terrible plagues? Well, we know. Something's, you know, up. Something's happening here, and people stop. People notice, right? It doesn't happen that way, as we know. But it can, and then you stop and you think, wow, you say, wow, there's a God running the world, because they deserved what they got. So it usually doesn't, but if it does, we know that that's sort of a miraculous way of conducting the world. Al ken ksiv amar hadar ha'achrayim b'neichem asher yakumu me'achareichem v'hanochri asher yavei me'eretz rechayka v'ro'u es makos ha'aretz ha'hi. So we're talking about in the future when your children will come, right, from all the faraway lands. And it says they will see the devastation of the land, v'es tachlu'eha, and all of the illnesses. We're talking about from where they're coming, from all the people that caused us to suffer or the people that did the wrong things. So when Mashiach will come, we will see, so to speak, the punishment that will happen to them. As we say, shelo yismo ba'ishahu asher rafza bay kol ha'ela, ki kein yeh pa'amim rabim, kimin hagay shel oylam b'chol ha'umais, sheyavoyu mikrim ra'im b'ish echad. Right? So many times you have bad things happening to one person. Rak ba'aretz ahi, yismohu v'yishalu, but in that land when it will happen to everybody, everybody will wonder and everybody will ask, kol ha'goyim, al ma'as Hashem kachal aretz azayis, why is Hashem doing this to this country? So the truth is, in the world we have seen, if there's like big devastations, sometimes people do get a bit of a shake-up. They say, oh, something's funny here, something's fishy, especially if sometimes you have where you have one natural after another, people start to feel uncomfortable in themselves. They start to worry. That's human nature. Even the biggest skeptic starts to think, something's off. You know, why are so many bad things happening in this concentrated place, right? So we realize that there's something higher in control over there. But that's not the usual way the world runs, as we know, and it doesn't happen that way. It's more chance, like somewhere here, somewhere there, a little bit there, a little bit here. That's usually how things work. Okay, so he says like this, and why are people shaken up? Because he says, ki kulam yiru v'yedu, ki yad Hashem asas azayis, because everybody will know that it's the hand of Hashem that did this, v'yomru, al asher azvu es bris Hashem aleke avaysam, because they left the God of their father, the bris, the covenant, and therefore this is what happened. Nowadays, people don't really make that conclusion even still, because we are so far from, unfortunately, people are really far from any realization that there's any higher power in many countries and in many places, and that's how we've been trained to think. But still there are people who will come to that conclusion. But let's see what we're getting at with us. So let's understand, what does that have to do with doctors? So he says like this, v'haklal, so the general rule, Ki b'hiyayis Yisrael shleimim, when the Jewish people are complete, v'heim rabim, lo yisnaheg in yonam b'teva klal, then the way things operate inside them, and so to speak, from Hashem to them, from them in their world, is not natural. Loi begufam, not in their body, not physically. Loi be'artzam, not in their country. Loi bechlolam, not generally. Loi beyochad mehem, not individually. Why? That's when we're doing the right thing. He says, ki yevarech Hashem lachmam umeimam, Hashem will bless their bread and their water. V'yosir machalam bikirbam, and it'll take away all illnesses. Ad shelo yitztarchu l'roife, until they will not need a doctor. They won't even need, so to speak, all the precautions of the health, you know, warnings, if you want to say. It doesn't mean you don't live healthy, but you won't have to be exceptionally worried about these things, because if everybody's following in the ways of Hashem, things, everybody will be, so to speak, strong and healthy, and there won't be those fears, and there won't be that attention given not to going to a doctor and not to all these different health things, as he says. K'maisha amar ki ani Hashem reifecha, right? The pasuk says, I, Hashem, am your doctor. In that case, Hashem will be your direct doctor, so to speak. V'chein hoyu atzadikim oisim bizman hanavua. And we find many righteous people that they did this during the time when there was prophecy. Gam ki yikram avain sheyochlu. So if they taka did a sin and they became sick, lo yidrishu b'raifim, they didn't go to a doctor. What did they do? Rak b'neviim. And we know the famous story. What did Chizkiyahu do when he was laying on his deathbed? If you're laying on your deathbed, literally, he was so sick, why didn't he call a doctor? Who did he call? Yeshayahu, the prophet. What right does he have to call the prophet if he needs a doctor? He doesn't call a doctor, he calls the prophet. And interestingly, Yeshayahu told him what was wrong, that he has to get married, and he got married, and he got better, and he lived another 15 years. So the prophet healed him, because it was a spiritual illness, it was a physical illness, caused by a spiritual deficiency. And the prophet was able to point that out. But what right did he have, Chizkiyahu, not to go to a doctor, if it says we should go to a doctor? Because Chizkiyahu was such a tzaddik, and it was the time of the prophets, he was permitted to go to a prophet. But was he only permitted, or was it something that he was supposed to do? Did he do the right thing in the first instance? It's interesting. Should everybody act that way at that time? It's a fascinating thing. How does it work? So here, let's see what the Ramban says. The Ramban is very interesting. He says, let's see how he says. Okay, so he goes, yes, he says, sorry, can it, all right, ki, that's right, Indian Chizkiyahu, right, but b'chalasa, right, Chizkiyahu when he was sick, v'amra kasav gam b'chol yoloi darash es Hashem ki b'roifim. Now, there's another place that it says, and this is not talking about Chizkiyahu, that he didn't go to Hashem, rather he actually went to doctors. And who was this? This was a different king who lived just before Chizkiyahu. Asa his name was. He wasn't a very great tzaddik at all. He got sick, and the Navi tells us he called a doctor. I'm sick, I need a doctor. And the doctor came. Was that the right way he was behaving, or was that the wrong way he was behaving? Interestingly enough, the Mefarshim tell us, and Ramban says like this, he says, the Pasuk tells us that it was a wrong thing that he did. He was held accountable for not going to a prophet and rather going to a doctor. That's what the Navi's highlighting there. That's what it writes. Because he says, and he says an interesting thing, V'ilu haya davar harefim nohug bahem, if going to doctors is what they did customarily at that time, if that was the usual, matam sheyaskir harefim, then why are we even mentioning, so to speak, and looking at it in a negative way that he went to a doctor? Ein ha'asham rak ba'avor shalei darash Hashem. Then maybe we might say the problem is not that he went to the doctor, but that in addition to the doctor, he didn't also go to God. But it doesn't sound like that. From the Navi, it says he shouldn't have gone to the doctor at all. And he says an interesting example. He says, "Aval hu kasher yaymar adam." It's like when a person says, "Lo yachal pleini matzah." The person didn't eat matzah. Not only didn't eat matzah on Pesach, but he also ate chametz. So he's doing two things wrong. One thing is he didn't go to Hashem, and the other thing is he went to a doctor. But why shouldn't he go to a doctor? Is that what we all do? So let's see how the Ramban says. Aval hadayresh Hashem benavi lo yidresh b'rayfim. Somebody who seeks out God through the prophet shouldn't seek out a doctor. Uma chelek l'rayfim bebayis aisei ratzayin Hashem. A very strong language the Ramban uses. What portion, in other words, what place and what right does a doctor have to operate in the house where people are doing the will of Hashem? According to the Ramban, if in, obviously in that time when there was a time of prophecy, if the nation, if most people are following in the ways of Hashem, and if you are following in the ways of Hashem, and it's a time of revealed godliness, you have no right to go to a doctor. Doctor doesn't belong, even though there were doctors. Obviously they did exist, but you have no right to use a doctor. You have to go seek what Hashem wants. We'll finish and then we'll see if we have any questions. But let's see what he says. Achar why sheftiach uberach, because Hashem has promised us. Not only has He promised, but He blessed us. Es lach mecha ve'es meimecha v'hasiroisi machala mikirbecha. He is giving blessing into your bread and into your water, and He has said, "I will remove all illness from amongst you." So what's the point of a doctor then? Is there a room for a doctor? Does that profession exist in that time? So he says such an interesting thing that I think is so amazing, because it's like so applicable. Like we can understand that, I think, more than anybody could even in previous generations. He says like this, V'harayfim ein ma'aseihem rak al ha-maychal v'ha-mishka l'hazir mimenu u'letzavais alav. What's the point of a doctor? To tell us what to eat, what to drink, what not to eat, what not to drink, and that's it, because that's how we'll remain healthy. A very beautiful thing, which actually, in a sense, we're finding out now, even when we're not even behaving ourselves so well, that's the truth. The truth is that's what's meant to be. And if the doctors were just, whatever, if there wasn't money, as we know, whatever, it's a whole different discussion, and they would want to do things as precautionary, we would all be trained, and we would all be, from when we're very young, to eat properly and drink properly. And that doesn't mean everybody would remain 100% healthy, but many illnesses would be averted, as we know, many. There are many that still would be there, many would be. But you see here, the Ramban says, even in the time when there is a godliness revealed, a doctor has a place just to tell us what to eat and what to drink, how much, how little, when the right time is to eat those things. Quite a phenomenal thing, very progressive, if you want to say. Okay, but let's understand still, but so well, we still go to doctors. It would be good if they would learn the Ramban also, but let's see what he says. V'kach amru, and then he has a very beautiful story. He brings a story that is from the Gemara. And the story is a fascinating one. I want to see it a little bit more in detail. Okay, and I'll read you here, and then I'll tell you the story. So the story, and here he says like this. Kol Isrin v'tartin shnin, all of the 22 years, de Moloch Rabba, that Rabba ruled, it wasn't ruling, but he was the head of the yeshiva in Pumbedisa, in Babylonia. At that time, there were three main yeshivas, but two, Pumbedisa, Sura, and Nahardia. Very big yeshivas, that was like where the Gemara was written, amazing. And the heads of the yeshiva, they were the heads of the Jewish people at the time. They weren't just an ordinary Rosh Yeshiva. So at one point, Rabba was the Rosh Yeshiva. And at that time, and I'll tell you in a minute, so for 22 years he ruled, it says. Rav Yosef, so it says, during those 22 years, Rav Yosef afilu umna lebeiseha loikra. Rav Yosef didn't call even a blood letter to his house. Now, in those days, that was one of the things they used to do. They used to call a blood letter. For 22 years that Rabba ruled, Rav Yosef didn't even call a blood letter. What is it talking about? Okay. Suck the blood. That was there, yeah. There were different ways throughout the generations. Later it became with the bankers and the leeches and all the different ways that they did. This was one of the ways that they healed people. They thought that the poison was in the blood or the illness, and you let out the blood and the person would get better. So in those, especially in the times of the Gemara, it was a very big practice, and people would either go to the bloodletter, or if you were a special person, the bloodletter would come to you, right? You don't have to, you know, he was a very big tzaddik, so... So here he says, on a simple level, what we understand is that he was so well for those 22 years that he never even needed a blood letter. So what's the story here? So the story the Gemara says is like this, that there were many great tzaddikim at the time, many great Talmidei Chachamim, but the head of the yeshiva of Pumbedisa had passed away, Rav Yehuda, and they needed a replacement Rosh Yeshiva. And there were two great, great leaders, Rav Yosef and Rabbah. And they were equally great. One was more great than... What? No, Rabbah. Rabbah. This is the time of the Gemara. It's before the Rambam, yeah. So he said it's in Babylonia still. You know, it's after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, but it's right there, yeah. So it says that Rabbah was a person who learned very, very deeply. Rabbi Yosef had like an extensive, wide knowledge. And they actually sent a letter to Israel. In that time, there was still, you know, yeshivas in Eretz Israel, as we know the Talmud Yerushalmi, asking which one takes precedence, like which one is more important, the one who can learn deeper or the one who can learn more, to know which one to choose as the Rosh Yeshiva. The answer came back that the one who had a wider knowledge is more important because everybody needs to know like everything. So in other words, you need somebody who can, especially in those days, there's no computers or anything, but this way you can get the halacha properly, and this also he'll be able to relate to everybody, and everybody will be able to learn so much from him. That's what they paskins. Comes back the answer, but Rav Yosef says, no, I'm not becoming the Rosh Yeshiva because, the stories that are told is because of his incredible, incredible humility. And he said, Rabbah's greater than me, I want him to be the Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbah was Rosh Yeshiva for 22 years. He lived for a long life. And Rabbi Yosef only became Rosh Yeshiva after Rabbah passed away for 2.5 years. There are other interpretations to the story, and this is quite fascinating. It's just a little side detail. I'll get to why I'm mentioning it here. But a very cute thing that it says that at that time, there were stargazers, and they told, if you listen or you don't, but obviously they came to him, or people who, I don't know, had premonitions and whatever, they said to Rav Yosef that you are only going to be Rosh Yeshiva for 2.5 years. So Rav Yosef's not in a rush to become Rosh Yeshiva. Why should he become Rosh Yeshiva in a rush? He only has 2.5 years, then he's going to pass away. So rather let Rabbah become Rosh Yeshiva first, and it worked. Because he was for 22 years, and then he became Rosh Yeshiva, so he lived so much more. I think Gemara there points out a cute thing, that it's not good to rush things. Everything comes at the right time. Sometimes better not to jump in, let things take its flow. And at the right time, it'll happen, when it's meant to happen. So very interesting, but most of the explanations on the Gemara, because it's also brought the story in another place, is that the reason why Rav Yosef hesitated was his humility. He didn't want to take over. He wanted Rabbah to be the one in charge, even though it says beautifully, beautifully that the students of both Rabbah and Rav Yosef treated them both with equal respect. There's many extended stories how one of the students, at the end of his life, Rav Yosef, very interesting thing also, it says at the end of Rav Yosef's life, it sounds, I don't know, it's right for me to say, but it sounds like he had some form of a kind of a dementia because it says that he became blind, but he also couldn't remember. And he was a brilliant man who had a memory like this, so it must have been. But they still treated him with such respect that his students used to remind him of all the things that he had taught them. So he still, it sounds actually quite sad and yet beautiful at the same time, where he still retained his position. And it says, despite him being blind, one of his students, and was really a student of Rabbah, used to walk backwards all the way to his house, not only in his presence, like not to show his back, but kept his face, so to speak, all the way out of respect because of their, even though he was blind, Rabbi Yosef couldn't even see. So that was the most incredible respect that the students had. And when Rabbi Yosef found out, he blessed him, he was like so touched. But anyways, those are different stories. But the point over here is something quite incredible. Why the Rabban is bringing this is because it's showing us something amazing. All the time that Rav Yosef, 22 years, and these are not when he's young, okay? He wasn't young. So let's say he's over 60, or for sure over 50. People over 50 or 60 needed to see a doctor once in a while. Not once did he need to see a doctor. Why? So the answer that the Gemara gives was because of his incredible humility and his incredible respect to his colleague, Hashem prevented any illness from coming upon him, which shows that a spiritual greatness caused a physical effect. You can see, as the Ramban's saying, he didn't need a doctor. He didn't need to go to a doctor because he was in such a high spiritual state. Now that's a miracle, as we know. That's a special person, gets special miraculous treatment. We unfortunately don't get that miraculous treatment. According to some opinions, when the Gemara is, the Ramban's bringing it in that context, because that's why he's bringing it, that he didn't go to doctors. But there is another way of looking at it, that he didn't even call a blood letter to his house means that if he needed a blood letter, he would go to their house, because he didn't want to assume any form of leadership. So he didn't want anybody to look up to, like, oh, you come to me, I'd rather go to you. But as you can see from the Ramban and many interpretations, he didn't even need a blood letter. So his humility was what literally caused him physical protection. Quite an amazing thing. So here we see the Ramban says, you don't need a doctor. You just need to perfect yourself spiritually, and then you will not need to come on to doctors. And as he says, he actually brings another famous line. He says in Brachas, it says in the Gemara Brachas, "Shein darkam shel bnei adam berefuas ela shenahagu." Sorry, as he says that. Oh, sorry. There's one line before that. Tara delay. This is from the Medrash. Tara delay psiach le mitzvasa psiach le asya. A door which is not open to mitzvahs is open to doctors. Now again, as we said at the beginning, you cannot make a direct connection and say somebody is not well, that means they're not a good person. But what we are saying, that there is an attitude that we are meant to have, that even if we do go to a doctor, because that's what we do, we should not forget the spiritual component. That's a very big part of the healing process. So we have to remember that in the ideal world, that would be the only thing we would engage in. But it's not the ideal world. So we do have to go to a doctor. But we also have to do the spiritual healing. That's because that's really the more important one. But as the Ramban says, but so then why do we go to, if this sounds like, oh my gosh, he was just humble, and look, he didn't even need a blood letter. So he says, but the bottom line is, this is how we started to act. If it wasn't our way, if we wouldn't have accustomed ourselves to be, so to speak, go through all the medicines, then Itaka would only get sick as a punishment, and he would heal as in the, by the will of Hashem. Since we've already conducted ourselves that we do go to doctors, Hashem hinicham, and Hashem allowed us to go into the natural order. So that's what's happened. That's what's become accustomed. So that's what we have to do, because that's just the way we conduct our life, as he says. This is what it means. V'rapa yirape. What does rapa yirape mean? Mikan shenitna reshus l'rafei l'rafeis. From here we see that the doctor was given permission to heal. Lo amru shenosna reshus l'chayle l'hisrafeis. It's an interesting thing. It doesn't say that the ill person was given permission to go to a doctor. No. Or heal himself in by his means. Rather, the doctor is given permission to heal, which means the doctor is not doing anything wrong if somebody comes to him. Because that's an interesting thing. Because even if we say, according to Rambam, we've started to act that way, that we go to doctors, but who says the doctor's allowed to let us in? Maybe he shouldn't practice. Maybe he should only practice, as we said, by giving advice on eating. Who says he's allowed to do any other intervention? So we say, that's what the Pasuk tells us. Yes, Hashem has given doctors permission to engage in their field of medicine, to try and heal us, as we say. And that's why he continues, and he says, Ella kiva, I'm sorry, let's see, like amru shenos arel chayla, right? Ella kiva shechala chayla, since the person became sick, uba lehis rapes, and he's come to be healed, ki nog berefuais, because that's how he's accustomed himself, that he goes to doctors, and he takes medicine, vuhu loy haya me'adas Hashem shechelkom v'chayim, and he's not part of the congregation of Hashem, that their portion is life, ein l'reifei lasar atzmai mirefuas, the doctor doesn't have to say, no, I can't heal you, loy mipnei chshash shema yomus biyadai, not because of the worry that the person will die in his hands. Since we're talking about a doctor who studied and he knows what he's doing, hopefully, right? So he's going to try and do the right thing. And he shouldn't refuse and say, oh, God is your doctor, and that's it. Because that's how we've already accustomed ourselves to behave. Now we come back to our psukim, ha'anoshim ha'nitzim, those people who were arguing, who were fighting, shehiku ze'ezem, one hit the other, be'evenoi be'egref, right, with a stone or a fist, yesh al hamaka tashlume harifua. Therefore, the one who was hit, he has to pay back, compensate for the doctor's bills. Because the Torah never relies its laws on miracles. That's not the way the Torah works. The Torah operates in the natural order. We know what the Pasuk tells us, that you have to give tzedakah, right? And it says over there that poverty will never cease from the land. Why does it have to say that? because the Torah deals with the reality. The reality in the physical, natural order is that there will always be somebody who is poor, and there will always be a need for somebody to give them tzedakah. In the same way, somebody will be sick, and a doctor can heal. It says, "Midaita sheken yeh aval b'rtzais Hashem darkei ish." Ein loy esek b'reifim, but if a person wants to live in that ideal plane, so to speak, in a sense, he wouldn't have needed doctors. But as we say now, you can see, because that's become the custom, and that's what we engage, and we don't live in the miraculous times, and most people don't follow Hashem 100%, we have no choice, but we have to go to a doctor. Now, interesting thing, though, again, as we say, what's important is the perspective, is that we have to realize that we have to go to a doctor, we don't have a choice, but it would be so much better if we didn't. Not because we're not sick, but because what would be the ideal is if we could just sit and daven and that we should be healed. But it's not the way Hashem made it, so we do daven, and we do all the spiritual, and we do improve in mitzvahs, but we also have to go to the doctor. So it's a fascinating Ramban that comes in from this pasuk of, well, connected, as you see, he connected to Rapi. That's where we have permission to heal. Quite an amazing, amazing thing. Yeah, it's a beautiful idea.
The Yiddish expression comes as
Helsvi Taita Barkas. That's it. Yeah, as we know. Yes, yes.
The Barkas. It's
a hard one to translate, but the Barkas are those bloodletting, the leeches. Yeah. Yes, yes. Like as if they're dead. Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. And it's beautiful when you say it in Yiddish. No other way to do it. Yes, that's it. Okay, I'm sorry I didn't make a copy, but I want to read you. I'll read slowly, and please ask if it's not clear. I want just one more thing before we move on to the next part of the topic. There's a beautiful Al Shech that explains this pasuk and how it flows. The pasukim over here about if people are fighting. So the pasuk said, "V'chi rivun anoshim." If two people are fighting, "V'hika ish es reyehu," and one hits their friend with a stone, "be'even oy be'egref," or with a fist, "v'lo yomus," and the friend doesn't die. The person that you've hit doesn't die, but rather he falls to his bed. So you've damaged him, right? We mentioned this. Then he says, "V'im yakum," if he gets up, "v'hisalech b'chutz," and he's, thank God, he gets better and he's able to walk outside, "al mishantoy," on his stick, "v'nake hamake," then the one who has hit is cleansed. Like, in other words, obviously he's, you know, doesn't have to be punished terribly, but what does he have to do? He has to do compensation, as we mentioned. And here he mentioned rak shifta yita, and he has to obviously compensate for the time off of work, and Rape, and for the medical bills. Okay, so the Al Shech will take it a little bit deeper. He explains the whole context of the psukim. So he says, "Achar oimrei din make ish v'goynev nefesh u'mekalal aviv." Before these halachas, we learned all the halachas about if somebody hits their parent or curses their parent or kidnaps. Do you remember we said all of those terrible halachas, and in those cases they are put to death. He says, "Bav yoymar." How is it possible for those terrible, cursed things to happen? They are so bad. How could it be that somebody would kidnap? And how could it be that somebody would curse their parents or hit their parents? How could such a thing happen? So he says like this. It starts with, ki yirivun anoshim. Just when we start a little fight. Just have a bit of an argument. That's how it starts. It usually starts very small. So people are arguing, you don't get along. And then what happens? Many terrible things evolve from that. Kav le kav ad asayn yihyeh. From one thing to the next until a terrible tragedy happens, right? Something big happens. Starts small, small argument, leads on and on and on, evolves, evolves. And he says here, the pasuk tells us, so to speak, the evolution. So he says, why? Ki meharriv bidvarim. First, you're just fighting with words. Then yimshach sicha ish esrei eyu ba'even oy ba'egref. Unfortunately, sometimes then it leads. You get all riled up and the words are not enough. And you pick up a stone or you pick up your fist and you hit the other person, as the Al-Shuch says. Upam rishayna. So the first time it happens, lo yichle ra'ala hamis. You don't hit the person to kill them. I mean, you're hitting them because you're angry, probably, and you just hurt them a little bit, as we say. You might cause a little bit of damage, but you're not out to kill them. Ki im nafal mishkav, the person just falls into bed, as the pasuk says, right? That's all you've done. done a bit of damage, so to speak, so they fall into bed. So you shouldn't think that just because the person didn't die when you hit them, that you are absolved and that you're innocent from God's rule, and you know, from the judgment from Hashem. Why? Because Ba'imer Kire Ehu Davar Sara Kenegda was my, you know, was his fault. He shouldn't have antagonized me, or he shouldn't have started the argument, or whatever it may be. And because of that, he, you know, as we say, I couldn't control myself. He brought it out in me, and I hit him. So I'm not really responsible. Look, he didn't even die; only a little bit of damage. That's what the person might think. So the Alshach continues. Ki haloi gam yokum v'his alech b'chutz. Even if he gets up, he gets better. Baruch Hashem. And he's able to walk outside. Nevertheless, as we say, v'yishalim loy d'mei bateles melachta, you have to pay him back for the fact that he has been off of work, urifu asay, and for all the healing, the medical bills, lo yinakem midine shamayim, and even after he's paid all of that, he's still not clean from what Hashem's account. Why? Ki haloi rak shifta yitain. What does that mean? Because bilvad betelas melachta yumashenoisein, ach betelas melechas shamayim, achar bitloi mikama mitzvahs Hashem, oidena oimedes lifare lifnei halekim. You caused him to be off work, so you can compensate him for that. Okay, but what about all the mitzvahs he couldn't do when he was in bed? What about all that loss? That you will never be able to compensate him for. And that's held accountable forever in heaven. It's quite a powerful thing when we think about it. So this, he says, as the Alshach says it quite beautifully, we think, oh, these things don't happen to us. But it's just a small thing leads to a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And the effects even, and that's the problem, he says here. Sometimes the effects, we think they're nothing. Like the person got better and everything's fine. Nothing, it's still there. It's not a clean slate. You should never think it's a clean slate, because it's not. And that's why he says, not only do you have to pay the medical bills for your friend, but you have to make sure to heal yourself spiritually. Because what caused you to get into this situation? There's something wrong with you if you allow yourself to be sucked into this situation. Ki halay her shia lasais, you did something really bad, right? As you say, you acted in a bad. Ki kol amarim yod nikra rasha. We know the famous thing. Anybody who lifts their hand is already called wicked, right? We know from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. So the fact that if somebody antagonized you to the point and you were able to lift your hand physically, doesn't matter what he did, something's wrong with you. He's also something wrong maybe, but that's not your problem. But something's wrong with you. And you have to analyze it really deeply and make sure to heal yourself. Zehu aimrei v'rapa yirapei. That's why it says it double. Kishtei refuais muteles alav. Two doctor's bills, so to speak. One, you have to pay the other person's doctor's bills. And the other one, you better find yourself a good... whichever way, spiritual healer of some sort to make you better and pay for that. So it's a very beautiful how the Alshach puts it. I thought it was quite a magnificent way. And this is, as we know, it looks so far, but we can relate to all these things on a certain level for sure. Okay, well, we have a few more minutes, so let's see a few psukim. The next topic is a bit technical again. We'll just see a bit of technicalities, I feel bad, because next week we'll see something else nice, also in the technicalities, but still. So we're moving on with the damages. So now we've had, I'm trying to find exactly, so now what we've seen is, we've read the psukim which dealt with the person actually damaging another person and causing, you know, really physical harm, and all the different compensations that he has to do. So, let me find my place. Let's see here. He goes on and he says like this. In Pasuk, I want to continue. We've read some of the Pasuk we read earlier, so I'm going to skip a drop, and I'll show you. We're going to go to Pasuk, because last time we read about the eye for an eye, all of that. I'm going to see. Let's go now on page 422. Let's go to Pasuk Chaf Ches, verse 28. Because now we're coming to a different section of damages. So page 422, Pasuk Chaf Ches. And what is this category? So he says like this. So we've now talked about direct physical injury, right? And then we said, now we're talking about injury and losses caused by property. So I'll just give a drop of an introduction. What does injury and losses caused by property mean? First of all, a pet. An animal, not necessarily a pet, but if we have a farm, so we have an ox, we have a sheep, we have, the Torah uses the word ox, but it doesn't just mean an ox, it can mean any animal, but it also means a pet. So if you have an animal and they cause damage to another person, you're responsible. And the Torah will tell us exactly many details. So that's one way. There's another way that you can indirectly, if you want to say, buy property, so to speak, cause damage. So there's actually, it's really four categories that is given in the Gemara, really, as we said, really elaborates and explains the psukim. But according to the Gemara, the next one is called bar. So this one is called shar, the ox, where an animal does damage. Then there's a bar. What's a bar? A bar is a pit. So a pit is like this. Let's just say, in the public domain, you dig a hole and you don't cover it. Somebody walks by and they fall in. It's the public domain. You don't own that piece of land, but you dug that hole and you didn't put something around it or cover it. You are responsible to pay for the person's damages. Again, this is it's very detailed and very specific, all the different things. It's fascinating. It says not only if it's a pit, but what happens if it's something protruding? That's also in the goes into that category of bar. So if you leave something big and somebody trips over it, that's a problem. It's interesting with the bar, fascinating thing is, if somebody digs a hole and then they leave it, and then somebody else comes and digs only the last little bit. So who's responsible? The last person. Okay, interesting, fascinating thing. If somebody digs a hole and maybe they put something on top, you didn't dig the hole, all you did was move that cover, you're also responsible. So it's an interesting thing, that what the Mefarshim say, why the Torah tells us all these things in such detail. Obviously we need to know the laws, but what the mindset is for us to realize, as Jews, we have incredible responsibility. And the responsibility that we have for the safety of others extends both within our property and outside of our property. It's interesting because, I don't know, I think about something like if we drop something, sometimes we have to be, you know, we might not realize, but we have to be very, very careful. You can't leave it. You can't, if somebody could slip on it, it's your responsibility. If somebody ate a banana and they dropped the peel, that's a problem. It's a big problem, right? So obviously we try not to do that. But the interesting thing is, if you do see a banana peel, obviously you didn't drop it, you wouldn't be held responsible technically. But the mindset is, pick it up. You don't want, you understand? Because even if you're not necessarily strictly speaking, but as you can see, the Torah does hold us responsible for the well-being of others as best as we can, if we could have done something about it. Obviously, the other person has to also be careful. And the third category is fire, and this is an interesting one. There's really a fourth one, which is a bit of a difficult one that the Gemara discusses what it really means, but the main one is fire. What's fire? If you make a fire in your own private domain, but then the fire goes out, you are responsible. Why? Because you should have been extra careful with the fire that you lit. Okay, so, and there's all different halakhas. Obviously, if it was unintentional, if there, let's say there was a wind, or, you know, there's all different halakhas, how that all works. So these are the general ideas, if you want to say. Just going to say one more thing before we'll finish, and next time we'll see it in the psukim. When we talk about the first one, coming back to the shar, it says that if a shar gores you, another person, and kills them, then the owner of the ox is responsible, right? Your ox gored somebody, killed them, you are responsible. So what you have to do is, you have to compensate the family financially for the life of the person that you have taken. The ox will be put to death. Very interesting in Torah. You know, you have these stories now with these wild dogs, and they do kill them, they put them to death, and that is the right thing according to Torah. And it's actually a very interesting question philosophically, why? Why should this ox or dog or whatever be put to death? A dog doesn't know what it's doing. So we say, in 1 second we can come, we say, very interesting thing, we say that because, I just lost my train of thought, sorry, because
the dog ate the smell in the
it's very interesting. So that's right. So Leah, so some of the Mefarshim say it's for protection because they'll do it again. Some say no, it's not for protection. It's actually interesting. They say it's more for prevention, in other words, that if an owner knows that that's what's going to happen, they're going to be more careful with their animals. So it's actually both. It's from both aspects, but you're right. Because you're worried about what the reason the Mepharshim say what you're saying is right is because they say that even if it's not owned by somebody, it's still killed. So it's obviously not a prevention from anything. But mainly we're talking if it's owned by somebody. And the interesting thing is that if a taka kills, if somebody owns an animal and it kills another person, what's the responsibility of the owner in this context? So in the Torah it uses the word that he should really be put to death. But there is no capital punishment done to him because capital punishment is only by direct murder. So what does it mean? He's held accountable by heaven. Hashem will take care of it. But he really has a death sentence over him and what he has to do. Therefore, the Torah gives him a way out where he can compensate, but the money he has to look at as a pigeon, like he's like redeeming his soul. It's really, he should be dead. But instead, Hashem provided him with the means of, hopefully, and then he has to continuously do tshuva. So anyways, we'll discuss it next week in Mirz Hashem more at length. We'll see.